Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We thought it was important to discuss not just the fictional elements of this novel, but also the real-life trauma that's faced by women and girls like Vanessa who have experienced sexual abuse. So I spoke with Dr. Karisten Konen, a professor of psychiatric epidemiology at Harvard and a co-author of the book Treating Survivors of Childhood Abuse, about her research into the impact that childhood sexual trauma can have on adult development. I began by asking Dr. Konen, what are some of the primary ways that childhood sexual abuse can have an effect on people in adulthood?
Well, one of the reasons I was so happy to talk to you is because I think my dark Vanessa really captures so many of the different ways. And I was really struck by the fact that the author was influenced by the same book that influenced my work. The seminal book I read was Judy Herman's Trauma and Recovery. That also started me on my career. So some of the ways that are one is in terms of relationships, how they think about themselves. Abuse erodes the sense of self. They can become where they think being abused or being in relationships where people hurt them is normal. It's what they're used to. So if something different happens, it almost doesn't feel right. It feels unfamiliar. People can try to avoid thinking about the abuse or avoid like feelings associated with it by drinking. We see this in the book. Using drugs, having sex with people that aren't good partners, or taking risks. It can also affect people's ability to, maintain jobs and careers. And then, after that is all the mental health effects: depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm.
So what signs of trauma did you see in the character of Vanessa that even if she doesn't think she was abused, she shows the signs of that kind of trauma?
So one was the way where she lost her sense of identity and really identified with her abuser. She even talks at one point, she talks about him sort of taking over her and his words coming out of her. She's parroting his words. She has nightmares, and she says, "Oh, well, I learned to avoid, certain kinds of movies and books. But sometimes out of nowhere, I start thinking about this." Sometimes she sees him or sees things that from that time when they're not in the present. There's a couple places where she's actually sort of re-experiencing being in the classroom with Strain, but actually he's not there. She's with Henry. She's really anxious. She's drinking. She's actually kind of revisiting the abuse with these various men. She gets in these older men. She goes to these bars with these older men and gets involved with, and she doesn't really want to be with them. And then the other piece is dissociation, which is when you kind of leave your body. There's a lot of that in the book, and she does it as an adult where she's sort of having sex with someone, and then she says she's not really there. She's in the kitchen making a cup of coffee or petting her cat, and her body is left on the couch. And so that happens over and over again.
We've been using the word grooming. What does grooming actually mean in the clinical sense when you're talking about grooming?
That's a good question. I mean, in the clinical sense, it means creating a relationship where the person is sort of vulnerable to whatever you do. So in this case, the grooming starts off with a sort of very sort of mild inappropriate things, like, paying attention, but then, putting his hand on her knee, like pushing boundaries. He pushes her hand on her knee, the maple leaf in her hair sort of outside. She thinks he's going to kiss her. So he pushes, sort of slowly pushing the boundaries to almost insidiously get under her skin and create this kind of relationship. And then over time that he pushes them more and more to where he's, they're having this sexual relationship. And even as, she's almost become so dependent on him, she's unable to move on. And she said in her 30s, she's still kind of going back to him.
On page 318, adult Vanessa says to her therapist, "I just really need it to be a love story, because if it isn't a love story, then what is it?"
That's so painful.
Why does she need to believe that?
Because her whole life because he abused her when she was 15, which is the time when a child is becoming an adult. It's when people form their identity. Hmm. Her whole personhood has been defined by him. And so what does she have left if it's not a love story? Then what is it, and what is she? Also, the other thing about this kind of abuse with by someone knows, whether it's a parent or a teacher, how does she believe in sort of anything or anyone when this person she trusted and loved abused her? If she really comes to terms with that, how can she kind of look at any relationship the same? So it really shakes the foundation of who she is. And I think that's what makes it so hard for her to actually, even see it. Or even when people start confronting her, she starts defending him. Like she says, she's parroting his words. She knows she's doing it, but it's just so difficult to see it, to see what he did as abuse.
If someone is on the road to recovery as an adult after, unfortunately, being a victim of child abuse, childhood sexual trauma, what's the first step?
That's a great question. The first step I think even recognizing that you've whether you call it abuse or not, the labels aren't so important, but recognizing you've had this troubling relationship, I think that's the very first step. And the next step, I would say, is confiding in someone you can trust. In some ways, therapy is really effective to help people who've suffered from abuse. We know that scientifically. We really can help. You can get help. You can recover. Sometimes it's too much for family members or friends. They have all their own, they have all their own issues. So I think that you mentioned the hotline. I think seeing a therapist, many rape crisis centers, even though they're called rape crisis centers, will talk to people who have abuse histories, even if it's in the past. So I think recognizing yourself and then probably talking to someone who's trained to listen to these things.
That was my conversation with Harvard professor, Dr. Kerestin Conan.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.